I'm David Martin Davies, and coming up on The Source, setting and achieving goals is a cornerstone of leveling up in life. When you match the right goal with focus and determination, big things can be accomplished. But what's the right goal for you? And how do you manage the process of achieving those milestones? There's actually now a wealth of scientific research behind goal setting and attainment. Goal setting theory filters out some of the popular assumptions that are wrong about how to accomplish big things. We're joined by Caroline Adams Miller, author of Big Goals: The Science of Setting Them, Achieving Them, and Creating Your Best Life. This is a community conversation. We want to hear from you. Call in at 833-877-8255. That's what's coming up on The Source, but first this.
Support for The Source podcast comes from UT Health San Antonio, South Texas' largest academic research institution, where what is discovered in its labs translates into life-changing patient care. More at groundbreakingresearch.org. This program is recorded from an earlier live broadcast.
Live from the John L. Santico studio in downtown San Antonio, this is The Source from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Setting a goal and sticking to it to unlock that big achievement, to many, that sounds like the stuff of toxic alpha male flexi podcast, but actually, goal setting is a powerful tool for everyone for personal and professional transformation. Whether in career advancement, health and relationships, setting clear, structured goals, they do lead to measurable improvements, and this is backed by science. Research in psychology and organizational behavior has established that goal setting strategies play a crucial role in achieving meaningful results. Caroline Adams Miller has written about the science of goal attainment. Her new book is Big Goals: The Science of Setting Them, Achieving Them, and Creating Your Best Life. And Caroline, welcome to The Source.
Oh, thank you for having me for this fun deep dive into such a cool topic.
Yeah, I'm excited to talk to you about this. I'm very, I love goals. But let's get our callers in on this. My goal is to get callers to come in and talk about their experiences with goals. You can call in. The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. You could also email us at thesource@tpr.org. And you can text us also at that call-in number, 833-877-8255. What are your questions about goal setting? What's the best way to set a goal? And what are your experiences? How have goals changed your life? So, Caroline, tell me about the science of goal setting. This is not just happy-wappy pop psychology stuff anymore.
No, and I think that there's a misconception that things like SMART goals or even OKRs and KPIs are goal science, and they're not. And I learned that when I went back to school in 2005 and was really surprised to find that there was this thing called goal setting theory by two really established academic scholars, Edwin Locke, Gary Latham, still alive, who did decades of research and came up with a simple, elegant theory called goal setting theory. Ranked number one of 73 management theories, and yet it is widely unknown in companies, in the mass market, in many places. And it surprised me then, and it still surprises me, that everyone sets goals, but they're using pop, psych, or urban legends to achieve them. And I think we deserve better.
So in goal setting theory, we've seen this is something that has been reproduced. People have looked at it over and over again, and over 1,000 times they have found out that this is an effective way for people to set and accomplish big things.
Yes, yes. And it's been decades of replicated research, and the field of positive psychology in general is being racked with scandals. People making up their research, plagiarism, and non-replication. And this is one of the most replicated findings. And it just divides goals into two buckets, really important. They're called learning goals and performance goals. And I call performance goals checklist goals. From now on, I'll just say learning and checklist. And getting it wrong sets you off on the wrong foot and could lead to all kinds of damaging consequences.
Why should someone bother to set a goal? Why not just,
Yeah.
You know, when I started out in life through high school and college and into my 20s, I had never heard anything about goal setting. No one had ever talked to me about a goal. It was basically just go show up and, you know, either things work out for you or they don't. But then eventually I stumbled across some of this literature, and it was still pretty fuzzy at the time, but it did help me clarify that I could take charge of more things in my life by having a clear vision for what I wanted to accomplish. And then things turned around quite a bit. So, but why? But can people still do this at any time in their life, with any type of things that they want to accomplish in their lives, not only with their own lives, but with in wider, helpful parts of society?
Yes, and your story is great because it speaks to the power of goal setting, however you find it. And so that's one of the clearest findings in the research, is that when you set a goal, it immediately mobilizes your energy, your thoughts. You scan your mind for who do I know who can help me accomplish it? What do I need to learn, et cetera, et cetera. So goals direct action. But more importantly than that, it's not just that we can set goals, we have to set goals. That is what we are put on earth to do. We require, as human beings, there are three needs: competence, autonomy, and relatedness. And competence means being able to master your environment, being able to set a goal and achieve it, instead of remaining helpless. And one of the findings that I put into the early part of this book is people still think learned helplessness is a real thing, when in fact, my main mentor, Martin Seligman, who had that finding in the 60s, it was overturned about 7 years ago. And what he found, he and his colleagues found, is that they had read the research wrong. They had asked the wrong questions. And instead, we are born helpless. We don't learn helplessness. We're born helpless. Our job as humans is to learn to master our environment. So it's learned mastery. And that is what we need to do. Otherwise, we'll just be batted around like ping pong balls for the rest of our lives by other people's wishes and desires.
But when you talk about goals and goal setting, sometimes people react to that. They're not, they see it as you're trying too hard, or we're not really supposed to vocalize these types of things. Keep it to yourself. You know, why can't we talk more about it? What's the stigma behind all that?
Well, I think that everyone believes that because they've done things in their lives, they've saved money for a car, they got into the school they wanted to go to, et cetera, you know, married the person they want to marry, that goal setting is just simple. There's a goal, I want to achieve it, I'll go get it. And so I think people have simplified it and they think, well, it can't be that hard, but not all goals are created equal. And the motivation, the mindset, the steps that need to be taken, the quit criteria, all matter if you're going to have the best possible outcome. But there's something bigger in what you just said. And in terms of, is it okay to talk about goals? What we know that hasn't been shared as widely is that men are allowed to be ambitious and goal-directed and proud of their achievements, and verbally so, openly so. In the last 90 years, there has been zero progress in how the world sees women who are equally ambitious and goal-directed and proud. So what happens is both men and women ghost and criticize and shun quite often women who are ambitious and or who have goals. And so I think women have learned to hide a little bit. It's not that we lack confidence. We just don't know who's going to have our back if we go pursue something hard. And that's a real cultural problem we're facing.
You write about that in a book, Big Goals, quite a bit about how women are held to a different standard, a different yardstick in the workplace. Mm-hmm. They have to present themselves differently, and we can talk about that some more. The topic is Big Goals, the Science of Setting Them, Achieving Them, and Creating Your Best Self. We do want to hear from our listeners. You can call in at 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK, about your experience in setting goals. How have they changed your life? What do you want us to know about your goal setting process? We'd love to find out about that. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Stay with us.
Support for TPR comes from Texas Mutual Insurance Company, a workers' comp carrier dedicated to handling claims proactively and a commitment to helping injured employees and workers' comp policyholders get back to business. TexasMutual.com/claims.
You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies, having a conversation with Caroline Adams Miller. She's written 8 books. The latest one is Big Goals, The Science of Setting Them, Achieving Them, and Creating Your Best Life. And we are talking about goals. What are your goals? How have you achieved them? How have they changed your life? So earlier, Caroline, you mentioned a SMART goal setting. And what is that? And what's wrong with that?
Well, it's just a catchy acronym that a man in 1981, a consultant, put together in an article and published, and it's sticky. But if you know goal setting theory, Locke and Latham's goal setting theory, and you make the R, for example, realistic, or the A,
what's an acronym for something, right? SMART stands for something or other.
Right. SMART, an acronym is when you've got a series of letters and it stands for another set of words. So SMART in his writing was specific, measurable. I think it was action-oriented, reachable, time-bound, whatever. What you're hearing in my voice is the fact that there are 55 definitions for SMART. And that's been called jargon mishmash syndrome. So over the last 40-some years, it's just begun to have so many definitions that it's lost its relevance. But even more importantly, Locke and Latham found that the best results always, always come from setting challenging, specific goals, goals outside of your comfort zone, which disqualifies the words attainable or even realistic, because there are times when we need to set almost unrealistic goals to see how far we can take ourselves, our grit, our character strengths, the relationships that support us. And so I call SMART goals a zombie goal setting theory because it should be dead, but it walks among us still. It's not science, and it's too widely used without people understanding that there is a science. And that's what's driven me since 2005 when I discovered goal setting theory. I think the world deserves better because everyone has a dream. But if you use these urban legends like the Harvard study of 1950, where 3% of people wrote their goals down and, guaranteed success, none of that's true. And so if you have a dream, you deserve to have the proven tools, unfortunately stuck in academia for too long, that will actually maximize your chances of accomplishing those goals.
Well, I know that, so the SMART goal framework is flawed. But the idea that writing it down, measuring, coming up with little benchmarks, having some sort of deadline to say a goal without a deadline is really just a dream.
Meaningless. Yeah.
Yeah. So, it's flawed. It's probably there's room for improvement, but it could be a little helpful for some folks.
It might help you get going. It's the tip of the iceberg. Let's just call it that, because it could help you define a goal, but it doesn't help you come up with a strategy that's going to work. And that's a piece of what I have spent 20 years working on, which is once you have goal setting theory and you divide goals into learning goals or checklist goals, then you have to bring it into the 21st century and take advantage of all the research we have on mindset, on character strengths, on emotional flourishing, on the investments we need to make, on grit. All of these studies and all of this research and all of these tools were not available when Locke and Latham, created goal setting theory, published in 1990, updated in 2013 to include priming, which is, images, smells, whatever in the environment that cause you to think goal-directed thoughts. You really need to have a strategy that's well-formed above and beyond just saying, here's my goal. It's well-formed, because I use SMART. Because I think you have to go deeper and more thoughtfully into what you want, why you want it, what's your purpose, who should be on this journey with you, who should not be on this journey with you. Do you have the right grit? Do you have a decision-making framework that will allow you to quit when it's time to quit? All of those things have to be part of a strategy. So, you know, some people want to stick with SMART, but it's not going to get you where you want to go. The bridge method does. It takes you from here to there. And I've spent so many decades working on this with executives and people all over the world that I know it works. And that's why I stuck my neck out and said, okay, women are not really supposed to be talking about agency and goal-directed behavior, but darn, no one else is putting it out there. So I'm going to bring the science to the world. And I really do love it.
So tell us more about Bridge.
Yeah. So Bridge is six letters. That's another acronym that totally encompasses everything you need to think through, all the obstacles, all the opportunities, all the relationships, all the mindset, you know, changes you might have to make that will allow you to take the goal you set once you establish that it's, you know, a learning goal or a checklist goal. And you go, okay, brainstorming. What's new? What's new in the world that will allow me to do this better than I did last time? Or what's new that will allow the world to do something for the first time? So you brainstorm, and there's ways to brainstorm effectively. So brainstorming is the first one. Relationships is critical. We know that behavior is contagious, both positively and negatively. And people don't always think through, who will I need to have a relationship with? Will I need a coach? Will I need a therapist? Will I need that guy in that silo over there at work who I haven't talked to yet, but in a month or so when I make progress on this initiative at work, I'm going to need that person to have my back. So relationships are critical. Investments. I mean, you need to invest your well-being, your emotional flourishing. We now know that all success in life is preceded by being happy first, flourishing first. You have to invest the right energy and emotional kind of zeitgeist into your goals. So there's investments of character strengths, investments of money, investments of time, investments of all kinds of resources. And then there's decision making. And this is really important because you have to know when to get going. You have to know when to pivot. If you're learning how to drive a stick shift car, you have to know, you know, decide when is it time to get on the highway. What are your quit criteria? How will you know your strategy isn't working? Quit criteria really matter. Grit is essential for big goals. This is the X factor of success. And there are a number of ways to cultivate this very important, you know, behavior and mindset. And I wrote a book called Getting Grit that really goes into that. And then excellence. You know, you have to have some decision before you start around what's the excellent outcome you're seeking, because that's how you're going to measure your progress along the way. So that's Bridge.
Now, in the book, you talk about good grit. What's the distinction between good grit and the other grit?
Yeah. Thank you for asking that. So I think the traditional thinking around grit is that it's just about being tougher, braver, harder, you know, harder working. And Angela Duckworth is a friend of mine. I've known her for 20 years as she developed her grit scale, her research on grit. And while I think it's very important to have passion and persistence in pursuit of long-term goals, that's the traditional definition, I think good grit is a little bit different, because good grit is when you're taking risks, going out of your comfort zone to pursue something incredibly important to you. And in the process of doing so, you awe and inspire other people to ask themselves, wow, what if I lived like that? What if I didn't complain, but I went for it? What if I had the dignity and self-respect to stand up to other people, or to do, you know, later nights pursuing my passion? So I think that good grit awes and inspires other people. And in that way, it elevates families, relationships, teams at work, countries. So I do believe good grit at its finest makes other people better as well when they witness displays of it.
Well, one of the things about goal setting is that you have to start off with the acknowledgement that you do have agency and that you can take control mm-hmm. over segments of your life, whether it be personal relationships or, mm-hmm. you know, how your performance at your work, even your own personal health. Of course, many of us have a lot more privilege in these areas than others, but we have to acknowledge that not everyone has abundances in their lives. But I mean, is it fair to assume that if someone is not a high achiever in life, it's because they're not good at this stuff?
Not necessarily. I think that you hit on something, which is the whole idea of having agency and control. I don't think everybody knows what they're capable of because maybe no one's believed in you before. Maybe you've never gone out of your comfort zone. And I think everybody can learn the basic techniques of goal setting by developing this thing called self-efficacy, which is having proximal role models, seeing people around you who are doing things that, you know, are bigger than them, and you learn from watching them, or having somebody who believes in you. And, you know, like grandmothers come up a lot in my research on grit. Grandmothers often play pivotal roles in helping kids to believe in themselves. But most of all, I think you have to have mastery, which means break things down into small chunks and accomplish them one at a time. This is a learnable behavior. Just like mothering is learnable, believe it or not. That's not instinctive for a lot of women. They learn it from watching other examples of good mothering. And that's kind of fascinating research, actually. So I think that anything can be learned. And I think the spirit of possibility, like what if, why not? Why not go after it? What if I lived like that? What if I took a risk? What if I didn't care what other people thought of me because this mattered to me? I think people have to break out of the cocoon of caring that other people might or might not like them or judge them. And I think that's very crippling. So I think there's a lot of reasons why people may not have pursued or achieved goals.
Every football team, NFL team, starts off their season with the goal of winning the Super Bowl, but only one mm-hmm. actually does it. What does that mean? You know, does it mean that their goals weren't good, or they didn't know how to do them? I mean, or you just have to have the goal in order to play the game.
Well, it's interesting because I've been, you know, I'm a big fan of football, and I'm a Redskinette, or not a Redskinette. I mean, they're not called the Redskins anymore, but I grew up going to Redskin games. They're now called the Commanders. But anybody who follows football knows that this team turned around this year. And why did it turn around? They had a goal of going as far as they could. But what did they do? For them, it was a learning goal, bringing together people who had never played before. That's what training camp is. We all need training camp in our lives, where you learn a playbook, you learn how to get along with people. How long does it take the quarterback to drop back? 3 steps, 2 steps? I mean, what does it take for me to play effectively with these people? How do I learn the signals? So on and so forth. So I think there's a whole learning that goes along with being a good football player on a specific team with specific coaches. Look at the coaching carousel that's going on now, the shuffling. Coaches aren't even given enough time to succeed. They just say, go out and win. This is goals gone wild. We want this outcome from you. But you know what? You've never coached a team. You've been an offensive coordinator. But go coach this team and go win. And that's not fair. It's a learning goal for them. And they need time to acclimate to that role. I'll give you a great example from football. I mean, from Texas, is Johnny Manziel. Johnny Manziel was electric. Oh my gosh. One of the greatest players I've ever watched, or anyone's ever watched. And so he got drafted into the NFL, and it was a learning goal for him to learn how to be a professional football player, not a guy who could wake up hungover and go out and win for Texas A&M. And so, yes, he knew how to play football, but he skipped all the learning about becoming a good professional. He didn't want to do the work. So somebody might have said, oh, it's just about going out and playing football. It's a checklist goal, you know, check, check, check. No, he knew how to play, but in a different arena with different coaches, with different teammates. It was a big step up, and he never made that step. And it's such a tragedy. So does that answer your question?
I think it does, but we've got another half hour, so we'll add some more questions to try and get a better sense of what are big goals and what is the science of setting them, achieving them, and creating your best life. Our phone lines are open. Listeners, if you've got a question or comment about goal setting, How have goals changed your life? Have you always wanted to become a goal achiever? What's holding you back? The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. You can also email us at thesource@tpr.org. The Source continues right after this.
This program is recorded from an earlier live broadcast.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Our topic, the book Big Goals, The Science of Setting Them, Achieving Them, and Creating Your Best Life. We're joined by the author, Caroline Adams Miller. You can call in. The number is 833-877-8255. And let's go to Gilbert. And Gilbert, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hello. Y'all mentioned earlier about how some individuals may have more agency than others in terms of goal setting. So I was curious to learn, when does goal setting become advocacy for others?
All right. Gilbert, thank you for that call, because that's kind of where I wanted to take this conversation. Appreciate that. So, Caroline, when we talk a lot about goals, we it's a lot about personal achievement. But when we think about like, how do we elevate others, we can use goal setting theory as well, can't we?
Absolutely. I coach mostly CEOs, and they are motivating and inspiring a workforce. And so it starts with getting the vision right. Where are we taking this company? And it's often done through storytelling and creating an awe-inspiring vision. I coach a CEO of a space company. Putting her country out in space is inspiring people in her country to become engineers, for example. So you have to have a vision that makes people want to be part of that journey. Then they need to have the resources and an understanding of how what they're doing is connecting with that vision. When you fail to do that, when managers don't give the right feedback, or the job is not described in a way that kind of locks into what they're there for in a meaningful way, people disengage. And so that's been studied over and over and over again. So leaders have to have not just agency, but the ability to inspire others to believe they can do things they've never done before. And that's a real skill. People talk all the time about JFK's putting a man on the moon speech. And they said that was one of the most riveting speeches that made people believe they had agency to do something hard. So inspirational leaders always have the ability to do this for others. And that is what's required when you're going to be part of a group effort, because not everything can be done alone. We often need people around us. So I hope that answers the question.
Let's go to another caller, Sophie. And Sophie, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you for taking my question. Sometimes when you go to break down really large goals, all of those tasks can kind of start to feel overwhelming, especially if you're already under a lot of stress or experiencing anxiety. So how do you help keep that from being overwhelming and daunting and make it more manageable?
Great question, Sophie. I appreciate that. You don't want to add more anxiety and stress to your life, but goals, they don't have to be that way, do they, Caroline?
No, they don't, except that a little bit of anxiety has been found to kind of help you sharpen your sword. And people have different levels of ability to deal with anxiety. And as a mother of three millennials, I know that the self-esteem parenting movement really stripped a lot of challenge and competition and valedictorians and dumbed down playgrounds. You know, just it really changed the world around us. And there was kind of a change in people's ability to handle stress because of that. And so the only way to learn how to deal with anxiety is to bring your goals down to steps that are manageable so that you begin to feel mastery. You will achieve your best outcomes as you ramp up the challenge and the specificity. But for many people, just getting over the anxiety of, gosh, I'm going to go take a risk. I've never done this before. Sometimes you need to have accountability to somebody who believes in you. A mastermind group is what I often recommend. People who all have goals and they come together on, you know, Zoom or in person to discuss their goals and get support from each other. And that really, really helps people take hard steps, is when they know someone has their back. And so a little bit of stress and anxiety is not necessarily a bad thing unless it's completely disabling, in which case you break the mastery experiences down even a little bit more, and then probably bring in some accountability partners.
Right. So when you set these goals and, you know, your identity may benefit from having good goals, but it doesn't, it shouldn't, you know, depend upon the goal. If you can't get out there, if you can't get to the gym every day or rack up all the miles or do it all the things that you wanted to accomplish, well, it shouldn't be crushing. I mean, don't you have to have some compassion, self-compassion with your goal setting? Look at the big picture. You're saying, okay, I didn't get to the gym today, mm-hmm. but I did yesterday, and I'm going to try again tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I self-compassion is huge because you're taking risks, you're doing hard things. And so you do need to have self-compassion. But there's a fine line between having excuses and pushing yourself out of your comfort zone. There's very, very interesting research showing that we all scan our days. At the end of the day, we don't know we're doing it for what we did that day that was hard. And why do we do this? We all do it because that's how we build authentic self-esteem. We are scanning our days for things we're proud of, and they're not the easy things. They're not the mediocre things. So I think we have to have a really clear-eyed look at, you know, do we have self-compassion because maybe we've been a little bit too aggressive and we have shin splints, or, you know, we're spending too much time at the gym. We're neglecting other important parts of our life. Maybe the goal needs to be changed. But we also have to keep an eye on, you know, are we giving ourselves excuses because we don't want to disappoint ourselves or look like a failure in someone else's eyes? So that's where individual goal setting and knowing yourself is so important.
So being very specific in the goal, but in the goal setting theory, they also want goals that almost seem or should seem unrealistic. How does that work?
So it's not that they all need to be unrealistic. We're talking about big goals, goals that change your life. So in order to push yourself out of your comfort zone, you may want to set goals that you've never achieved before that scare you a little bit. Now, you could tag them as unrealistic. Realistic means, yeah, you know, I think I can get there with a little bit of effort. Unrealistic tends to conjure up images of, gosh, I don't know if I can do it, but I'm going to try. Now, it's not for everybody, but I, you know, Locke and Latham said challenging and specific is the most important way to set goals because you'll always get highest and best outcomes. Some people are not turned on for best effort by having attainable, realistic goals. I live around the corner from Katie Ledecky, the Olympic gold medal swimmer, most decorated, you know, Olympic athlete of all time in the U.S., she doesn't set realistic goals because that's her DNA. She sets unrealistic goals. And as a result, she's remade the sport of swimming. She's changed what little girls aspire to because she went out and became the first woman ever to make a man's Olympic trials cut. She beats men in practice and in races. She does the unrealistic, and in the process, she has changed the world. So that's how she gets motivated. That's how many people get motivated. So I'm not saying overwhelm yourself with something that's completely out of bounds, but don't just set goals where if you reach your hand out, you can pull the apple off the tree. That's shortchanging yourself. You're not going to find out what you're made of. You're not going to find out how to use your character strengths most effectively. And you won't find out who has your back and who your cheering section is.
So a lot of people are dealing with health issues, diabetes, hypertension, issues like that. And I mean, can goal setting theory be applied towards dealing with health? Putting yourself out there to decide, I'm going to lose X amount of weight, be specific in how much you want to lose or where you want your blood pressure to go, or getting out and walking X amount of times per week.
Yeah.
You know, these are things that, you know, right now you haven't walked in a long time or maybe you don't feel good, but they can be the goals. But you're not winning an Olympic gold medal, but you can add years of comfort to your life.
Yes. And that's so important. And there's so many places people can go on YouTube to just find a walking program for people who haven't walked in 20 years. There's so many role models out there who've put themselves out there. Some are influencers and some are just people who want to give back. And so you do need to find somebody you can relate to, some kind of role model, somebody who in your environment is maybe doing the thing you want to do. So goal setting really, really helps.
When I go out to the park, I see people doing this and I'm inspired by them.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, we catch other people's energy, both positive and negative. So being around people who are doing their best, just take an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, go in there. Everyone wants to be sober. They're all trying to do something really hard that they haven't necessarily done before. Being around that kind of storytelling and positivity and optimism and effort is contagious. And it's maximized by all the slogans on the walls, one day at a time, you know, et cetera, et cetera. But what I there's so many things to say. Let me just stop there.
Well, the slogans, that's one of the priming things that you mentioned earlier, mm-hmm. you know, things yeah. that you can do set around you, whether you create a journal, something in order to keep you on task and focused and remind you of your goal setting, because every day is a challenge, so every day is a new set of overwhelming things that are coming at you. You do need a system in place to help you achieve these goals that are going to, you know, change your life for the better.
Yes, yes. And for some people, it's checklists. You know, when you look at surgeons or pilots doing their pre-flight checkup or their pre-surgery routine or hotel maids, I mean, there's a checklist that keeps them on track, keeps them motivated. Their definitions of excellence and competence are very clear. But when you talk about how do you stay motivated to just get up off the couch and go exercise or be able to play baseball with your grandson, it's just incredibly important to have realistic role models and people you can point to. And that is one of the most neglected areas in goal setting, is that if you go on something like Wikipedia, 82% of the biographies are of men, only 18% are of women. And so it's harder for women to find role models.
We'll talk about that when we come back from this break.
Yeah.
Our phone lines are open. Claiborne, I'm going to get you on the air when we come back from the break. 833-TPR-TALK. Source continues after this. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. With me on the line, Caroline Adams Miller. Her latest book is Big Goals, The Science of Setting Them, Achieving Them, and Creating Your Best Life. And our phone lines are open. We're going to talk about your goal-setting process. Questions, 833-877-8255. And we have Claiborne on the line. And Claiborne, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hey, I'm a paratrooper. Job is to jump out of airplanes in the middle of chaos and make things work. So in the context of this conversation, one of my favorite axioms, Isaac Mizrahi said, if you're going to fail, fail magnificently.
All right. Well, Claiborne, thank you for that. Is that true? If you're going to fail, I also hear from entrepreneurs, fail faster. Caroline?
Well, there's failing in an intelligent way and failing recklessly. You don't want to just go out and throw things around and say, oh, I'm going to give this a shot. That's why I have this bridge methodology, because it's a structure that allows you to walk through all the prompts and the questions you need to answer before you go out there. But yeah, you do want to take risks. I mean, there are a lot of companies that have really integrated an approach where if you're achieving every single goal that your manager gives you, you're not taking enough risks. You're not pushing the envelope, and you need to push the envelope to find out, you know, how far can you go? So that's another reason why you don't always just want attainable goals. You don't want to set the easiest goals for your bonus, but you know, you do want to get accustomed to falling short, because how else do you develop resilience? You know, in a mindset of, gosh, I don't know how to do it yet, but I'm going to keep trying. That's the mindset we want our kids to have. That's the mindset we want to have. And I made a point of sharing with my children all of my rejections as they were growing up, all of the things that hadn't gone well for me, because they needed to see that people get up and keep going. And I don't think enough of us make sure that the people around us see our failures, see the efforts that didn't get us what we wanted, but that we still kept going, or we changed our approach to that goal. And I have found that to be among the most important things my adult children have told me, gave them the courage to take risks as well.
Well, we have that expression, never let them see you sweat. Actually, you should show your sweat, show your work, so that people will know. I mean, that you are delivering for them. But you point out in the book that there are some gender issues with that.
Yeah, well, I mean, just it's unfortunate that we now can see so clearly. I think there was kind of a like, this doesn't feel fair going on in life and in the workplace, but we have the research now. It's very clear that women and men are held to very different standards in life when they're pursuing goals. And in the workplace, there's some really egregious examples that really upset me as I was looking through the research. Just a couple of them are, if a woman and a man are both onboarding at the same company and they're encouraged to go to happy hours and get to know your colleagues kinds of gatherings, the men will be applauded and lauded for doing that because they were encouraged to do it and they did it. And it was just all for one and one for all. Women who do the same thing are criticized. They're seen as self-absorbed and cold and even manipulative, because it must be all about them. Women who finish the same task they're given at work as men are given, who finish it on time and well, don't get the accolades they should get, because men who take longer and work nights and weekends and deliver it much later are seen as more dedicated and disciplined. I mean, I could go on and on, but women do not get the kind of feedback in life and in the workplace that allows them to correct for going in a different way. And so feedback is really, really important. You need to get clear process feedback about what you've done and how you've done it, not just generally, atta girl, you know, keep doing what you're doing. One more thing I'll say is that Adam Grant, I think a lot of people know about his books because he's written so many. He's brilliant. He wrote the book Give and Take, business book of 2017. And he wrote about givers and takers and matchers. The book is called Give and Take. And what he said was, gosh, if you want to be successful in life and in work, be a giver, and be a giver who gives without strings, but know when to stop giving to takers, because you can end up at the bottom of the success ladder because you don't have time for yourself. So men who do that get rewarded for being givers. Women who give in the workplace, they're never rewarded for it, because it's seen as they have to do it. That's what women must do. And how dare they have boundaries and say they have work to do and they're not going to throw the office party, because then again, they're seen as self-absorbed and cold and bad mothers. You even gets thrown around. So that book got it wrong. And Adam Grant admits it now, that if he could rewrite that book, he would have gotten it right from a gender perspective. Too much of the advice that's been out there in motivational books and tapes and whatever, it's like, go do this, the special forces people do it, works for men, doesn't work for women. And we've never really pushed back and said, but does it work for people who look like me, sound like me, my culture? Maybe not, probably not. So make sure your strategy reflects that.
And goal setting, ultimately, what we're trying to do is take control of our own future. Using yes. intentionality and a strategy, trying to say, you talk a lot about grit, and you know, I have some mixed feelings about that, because it kind of makes it look like, oh, if I just have enough determination, I will get there. But you know, determination isn't always show up every morning. What I need mm-hmm. is a system, systems in place, ways to help me when on days when I don't have the grit, I need something else that's going to get me to where I need to go. So how do we set up systems to help mm-hmm. us achieve the goals that we know are in our own best interest over the long term?
Well, once you've determined that a goal is yours and it's important to you, it's meaningful, and it's part of the legacy you want to leave behind, or you want to accomplish it because it'll say something about what you've attempted to do, you gave something a try, you went back to school, whatever it is, yes, we need to have habits. That's really important. And there's been a lot of discussion of habits in recent years, almost too much, but we do need to have habits. And there's a man named Peter Goldwitzer who did wonderful research on implementation intentions, where you pair things together. if I do this regularly, then I'll do that. If I get up at the same time every day, then I'll pair it with 10 push-ups. Or if I do this every day, then I will do the required reading, you know, for my class. So we do need habits, but I'm going to push back on you a little bit on grit, because it's not enough to have habits. It's not enough to be ambitious. It's not enough to want things to happen. What does matter is that you have the ability to see things through when you're tired. And so I gave a TEDx talk in 2014 where I talked about how I found over and over that gritty people, they went to a channel, they changed a channel in their brains when they were tired or wanted to quit or, you know, spiritually felt dead, but they went to a place where they pushed a little bit harder. And maybe it was a Bible phrase. Maybe it was an image of their grandparents in their mind. Maybe it was somebody they cared about who had brain cancer and they were riding for them in a race. I found over and over that that ability, that small ability to just change a channel, can allow people to persist just a little bit longer and get more of what they want. So you don't need grit for everything, but you do need grit for the hardest things.
Let's go to Mary on the phones. Mary, you're on the air.
Well, thank you so much. I know I have a few minutes. I was wondering, you talk about consistency, goals, and but what about procrastination? Where do you draw the line where you see, okay, I'm being procrastinated and I'm not reaching my goals?
All right. Thank you, Mary. Great call. Appreciate that. So, Caroline?
Yeah. Yeah, thank you. So there are world experts on procrastination. I've done workshops with
I've been meaning to read them, but I never get around to it.
Right. There you go. One day. So William Noss is the man who I spent a day with, and he wrote a book called Get It Done. And he said something that really struck me, and that is people who procrastinate have a procrastination sequence, which means they put off doing something because they anticipate a hassle. So they begin to say to themselves, oh, it's going to be hard. If I pick up the phone and call, I'm not going to get through to somebody, et cetera. And so they have a procrastination sequence that starts with the behavior or a thought, and they carry it out. And he said, it's really important to know what your sequence is and to break it and to deliberately break it and find a way to just, you know, do something you don't want to do for 10 minutes. Because if you continue to allow procrastination to win, because you get a little serotonin boost, you get some dopamine, like, oh, that feels good to put it off. It'll come back in spades the next day and the next day. So you need to fight it like it's a demon, but start with identifying your procrastination sequence and break it. And then decide when you get that thought. I had a thought, which was, I think I'll make a cup of coffee. That was always the start of my procrastination sequence, always. And it was brilliant because it would take me three floors away from my office and I wouldn't do any more work for the rest of the day. The minute I had that thought after that workshop, I broke it. I would make myself sit at my computer and finish my billing or do something I didn't want to do. And gradually, I've been able to eliminate procrastination. It's not a fog. It's a chain of behaviors and thoughts that you can break.
And so with big goals, what's the number one thing that you want people to take away from goal setting as a way to help them achieve a better life?
Yeah. So thank you for that question. I want people to understand that there is a real science, a proven science, a documented science, a replicated science to goal setting, that it's not just SMART goals. It's not just go out and do your best. There's goal setting theory, and then I've come up with this bridge methodology on top of it, which rolls all of the research together on what you need to ask yourself about and create as far as a strategy that marries all of the most recent research on flourishing, on character strengths, on grit, on mindset, et cetera, et cetera. And I want people to understand that this is learnable and everybody deserves to have the tools to make their dreams come true, because otherwise this information is not out in the mass market.
Yeah, this needs to be taught in schools. I just don't know why we don't teach this.
I know.
You know, first day of school, this is how you set a goal. This is how you achieve it. But it's all here in the book, Big Goals, the science of setting them, achieving them, and creating your best life. A checklist at the end of the book to help you organize and move through this thing. Caroline Adams-Miller, thank you so much for coming on board today. Appreciate that.
Thank you. It was such a pleasure.
That's The Source on Texas Public Radio. Thank you for listening.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted and produced by David Martin Davies. Technical support by Steve Short, Ruben Garcia, and Yvette Benavides. Dan Katz is TPR's Vice President of News. The Source is made possible with support from the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.